What's it going to take to get us out of the climate crisis facing our planet? Beyond policy and technology, Marcelo Gleiser argues it will take nothing less than a complete change in our intellectual and spiritual approach to life. And he makes his case in the new book, The Dawn of a Mindful Universe, A Manifesto for Humanity's Future. Marcelo is a theoretical physicist and a professor of natural philosophy, physics, and astronomy at Dartmouth College. He's a fellow of the American Physical Society, a recipient of the Presidential Faculty Fellows Award from the White House and the National Science Foundation, and he joins us now to share five big ideas from his book.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcelo Gleiser. I'm a scientist and a writer, the Appleton Professor of Natural Philosophy, and a professor of physics and astronomy at Dartmouth College in the United States. My scientific research covers what I call the three origins: the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin of mind. These three questions are huge scientific mysteries still, and they are as old as time and have inspired many religions and much philosophical thinking. But recently, my work has focused on more concrete and urgent questions, in particular, on how will we humans survive and thrive in the future, given our current global challenges. For this reason, I am very excited to share with you some of the key ideas from my latest book, The Dawn of a Mindful Universe, A Manifesto for Humanity's Future. I'm next going to share with you five key insights from the book to give you an idea of how we can work together to enable this new worldview. Insight number one: we are not above nature. We belong to nature. I use the word manifesto in the title on purpose. A manifesto is an urgent message, a call for action, a strategy to bring about change and transformation. And we do need a revolution, but not one fought with weapons for a political cause, but one fought with a new mindset, one that protects our collective future under the banner of biocentrism. What I call biocentrism is the principle that a planet hosting life is sacred, and that we humans must rise to the moral task of preserving our world and all life on it. The book asks us to rethink who we are, and the we here means all humans. In the book, I explain how and why we must embrace a new way of relating to each other and to all living creatures if we are to save our project of civilization and our home planet. Believe me, this is no naive dream, but a must for our future. Over the past 10,000 years or so, we used our incredible ability to invent new things, to transform raw stuff like metal and stone into tools we then used to plant, to build, and to fight. We humans grew in number and spread across the globe, feeding on any natural resources we could find. Initially, wood, water, coal, and later oil and natural gas. We use these resources to tame forests and fields into giant plantations, to congregate into ever larger numbers into cities, to heal diseases and to increase our lifespan. There is no question that technology changed the world, and it changed us, and that this change is still accelerating today. Now, all this progress gave us the false belief that we can control nature, that we can tame it like we tamed wolves into dogs, that we humans are above nature, that we are more like gods than like animals. But this overconfidence is a serious mistake. We are very much part of nature, dependent on it in very deep ways, much more fragile than we may want to accept. Just look at the deadly history of global pandemics and natural disasters to feel a little bit humbler about our so-called power to control nature. A sick planet cannot support healthy creatures. If the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat are tainted, we will not survive. We are part of the life collective, interconnected with all forms of life. Science and technology can and should help us, that's for sure, but they cannot save us from ourselves. We need a new way of relating to the world and to each other. And this new way calls for more than just technological outputs. It calls for a new human. Insight number two. We must move beyond tribalism. We all belong to a single tribe, the human tribe. But the question is, where is this new human going to come from? Since everything that matters to us comes from stories that we tell each other, we humans really are a storytelling kind of animal. This new human must come from a new story of who we are. And amazingly, this story connects us not only to our planet and to all living creatures on it, but to the whole universe. We are quite literally creatures of the cosmos. But before we go there, we must rethink our tribal roots. We must understand that despite our political and religious differences, we are a single species living on a fragile and rare planet. We humans need to belong to groups, that's for sure. And these groups often define our values and drive our actions. This is how it's always been, and this is all good. Belonging gives us a sense of dignity and purpose. The problem starts when a group or a tribe closes its doors to those who are different. A tribe protects, but it also attacks and jostles for power. We may belong to different tribes, from our families and communities to our sport teams and churches, but we are, first and foremost, the human tribe living on planet Earth. The new human narrative I tell in my book breaks down the tribal walls that separate us. It makes a convincing case that we need to work together if we are to protect our way of life and the planet that harbors it. Moving beyond our instinctive tribalism is not easy. It requires humility and an openness to those who think, look, and act differently than we do. Being open to the other can only enrich our experience of being alive, as we learn and grow not by conflict, but by humble curiosity. Since we live in a single planet, we are all dependent on each other for our collective survival. We must go into what I call a global hive thinking mode. Everything begins with the understanding that life is a rare phenomenon in the universe and must be protected collectively. That takes us to insight number three. Life is an anomaly in the universe, not the rule. Starting with ancient beliefs about life in other worlds, I explain in the book the nature and origin of life on Earth and of our search for life in other worlds in the field of what's called astrobiology, a new and fast-growing and super exciting scientific field of research. Essentially, we don't know how life on Earth emerged over 3.5 billion years ago, or if it exists elsewhere and in what form. But we do know that as stars live and die, they spread their atoms across space, becoming new stars and planets, and in our solar system, becoming living creatures on planet Earth. This is the dance of creation and destruction that happens all around the universe all the time. So we truly are made of stardust. We and all living creatures are the interconnectedness of the non-living with the living. Non-living matter makes us the living. It is an amazing thing. You take a little piece of the atoms that we're made of and they're not living, but together they live. What we are finding out is that life is a true anomaly in the universe, the exception and not the rule. Just look at our neighboring planets in the solar system, all magnificent and amazing worlds for sure, each different, but all of them barren, dead worlds. chances of finding life in any of the planets and the many moons of our solar systems are very, very small indeed. Even if there is life elsewhere, it will probably be very simple, amoeba-like, a one-celled organism. If there are other creatures out there capable of inventing tools like we can, and we really don't know one way or the other, we haven't seen them or found any convincing traces of their existence. Sure, we should keep on looking for aliens, but we also must come to terms with our obvious cosmic loneliness. This loneliness has deep moral consequences. Insight number 4. The universe only has a history because we are here to tell it. The fact that we know that life is rare in the universe, and intelligent life even more so, makes us different. We are matter capable of telling stories. We are the cosmic storytellers, the ones that give the universe a narrative and meaning. If there are other voices out there, alien voices, they will tell a different story, not ours. Life on Earth is unique. If there is life elsewhere, it will be different. In fact, we can state with confidence that we are the only humans in the cosmos. There will be other life out there, sure, possibly. Even complex life, possibly, but it will never be like us. So without our voice, the universe would unfold into meaningless forms created and destroyed through the ages, dead, silent, aimless. We humans know time, we know space, we know love, life, death. We celebrate existence and we are terrified by it. We build homes and weapons and spaceships. We build monuments to invisible gods and write poems about ineffable feelings. We look at the stars in search of our origins. You have a mysterious capacity for awe and wonder. We humans are the ones with the power to either destroy or protect our living planet and its biosphere. And the time has arrived to choose which path we will take. And we must choose with urgency and with care. Without our voice, the universe would fall silent. Insight number 5. Biocentrism, meaning any living world, is sacred. Since every tribe is united by a set of principles, what is the unifying principle of the human tribe? I call it biocentrism. The principle that any planet that hosts life is a sacred planet. The acceptance of our cosmic loneliness and of the rarity of our planet is a wake-up call, ringing to awaken a new collective consciousness. I believe it to be the new unifying myth of our generation, with the power to go beyond tribal divides and bigotry, to lead us humans into a new era of flourishing. But for this to happen, we need to change how we relate to life and to the planet that allows us to exist. We are not above nature, and we don't own it. We are a part of it and depend on it for our existence. Life is rare. We are rare. This planet is rare. So treasure life and planet. Worship it. Learn from indigenous cultures and their sacred connection to the land. They knew it all along. We cannot despise the land that gives us life. Let's resacralize our planet, make it sacred again. This is the moral imperative of our age. We owe this to future generations and to the life we share this planet with. This is why my book ends with a manifesto. A call to action with explicit steps we each can take to become catalysts of this upcoming transformation of the human history. Thank you for listening. I do hope you'll enjoy the book and feel inspired by it to spread the biocentric worldview of the new human.
Thank you, Marcelo. That was five big ideas from The Dawn of a Mindful Universe, a manifesto for humanity's future by Marcelo Gleiser. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.